You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello, welcome to episode 5 of Comedians Talking About Football. I'm Sam Michael, and today we're talking about Tottenham Hotspur with David Alfie Ward. Tottenham actually are the first football team whose shirt I owned. For some reason, no idea why, my first ever football shirt was the bright neon yellow goalkeeper jersey with the elbow pads from the mid-90s. I thought it was the coolest thing at the time, but having looked back at some pictures of me wearing it recently, I look like I'm wearing a sleeping bag, which is actually what it felt like. I swear the material on old goalkeeper tops were thicker back in the day. Do you remember? I swear they used to feel quilted. Anyway, I was a little nervous about recording this episode, you know, because not only is David a top comedian, but he's also part of the biggest Tottenham fan podcast in the world, The Fighting Cock. So I felt for him, you know, having to spend an hour in the company of old amateur bollocks over here. Speaking of amateur bollocks, if you want to get in touch at any point, please drop us an email at comedianstalkingaboutfootball@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram at @CTAF_podcast, on Twitter at @ComFootyTalk, or find us on Facebook, just search Comedians Talking About Football. Now, if you're a Spurs fan, no doubt David Alfie Ward needs no introduction, but let's take a little listen to him in action.
But I used to go on double dates with two of my ex-girlfriend's friends, and they were two really girly girls. And I used to go on the double date because in the back of my mind I thought, maybe. The thing is, I used to always get my relationship compared to their relationship, right? And I don't think you can do that. I don't think you can compare a gay relationship to a straight relationship. I think there's too many fundamental differences. I'll give you an example. Our lesbian friends who's out there in general will be having a night in on a Saturday night. They'll be put a picture on Facebook, having a glass of wine, red wine, candles, cheese board, right? Romantic film. My girlfriend come around to me and go, look, David, look what Susanna and Jenna are doing tonight. You never do anything like that for me. And I'm like, but babe, they're two really girly girls. They both sit down, they both decide they want to do that romantic shit on a Saturday night. You can't compare a gay relationship to a straight relationship. She's like, yes, you can, you're just a fucking arsehole. I was like, no, you can't, right? So I went to prove her wrong, Covent Garden, right? And I went out and I got two really butch gay guys. And we started going on double dates with them. And I started comparing my relationship to their relationship. So I'd be like, oh, babe, look at Steve and John watching football and not complaining about it. Sucking each other's dick at halftime. You never do anything like that for me.
David, thanks for coming on the podcast.
No worries, thanks for having me. I don't think I've ever met a Reading fan.
No one has. That's the thing. You know, no, it amazed me. You know, you think there with, you said, you know, you're doing a Spurs podcast, you know, one of many, and you're bringing in up to 30,000 listeners. I don't think I've ever seen 30,000 at the Majeski Stadium. You're the second person who's come on, actually, who already is part of a very successful podcast. So therefore, I feel quite nervous coming in here as a bit of an amateur. Of course, known by many Spurs fans from the Fighting Cock podcast. How did you get involved with that?
I must have been about 4 years ago now, but I was on guest on TalkSport I am acquaintances with Paul Hawksby, who does the H&J show between 1 and 4.
Okay.
And I was on TalkSport just filling a gap. I'm sure sometimes Paul just will message me, or I'll message Paul and say, oh, I've got this to promote or whatever. And he goes, yeah, come on this date. And I think one of the guys from The Fighting Cock heard me talking about Spurs, because it was already a successful podcast before I even got involved. And they said, would you like to come on? And just as a guest at that stage. And then it ran that a few years later, I'm still being asked on The Fighting Cock, and I go to their live shows, and I've gone on stage at their live shows. And it's been just great, really. Really kicked off. I didn't expect it.
I mean, that's the dream, really, isn't it? When you, as part of work, you're getting to talk about your football club.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I suppose we'll get into some of the stuff that The Fighting Cock has led some avenues. It's led to my career, not just in football as well, in comedy. So it's been a godsend, and the guys, Flav, who is the main guy that started it, and Ricky, and amazing people, and I'm very privileged to call them my friends now. It's just not always with these guys, just from being heard on The Fighting Cock, because The Fighting Cock, depending on the result and the week and how good Spurs are playing in that current time, can get anywhere between 15,000 to near on 30,000 listeners.
Wow.
And just that, you can just get stuff off the back of it in terms of... But just one of the other guys, a guy called John Bass, who is on The Fighting Cock as well. His missus is an executive producer for a TV production company called Expectation, and I've done TV warm-up for them just through knowing from The Fighting Cock. It's just like stuff like that. And Amsterdam last year, just literally the Friday just gone, it was a year on since that crazy result.
Yeah.
Me and Carl Donnelly went out to Amsterdam for the show, and I work in Amsterdam a lot at the comedy club. So I messaged the guy that owns the comedy club, and I said, listen, there are going to be 10,000 Spurs in Amsterdam for the couple of days that game's on. I said, why don't we, on a day of the game, do a 2 o'clock show? I take the tickets, the door sales, you take the bar. And nice. He said, yes, that sounds good to me. So I said to Carl, let's go 50-50 on ticket split and just do half an hour each. And we just promoted it on The Fighting Cock. We went on TalkSport as well. Sold out 125 tickets.
Wow.
Yeah, the owner of the comedy club must have been laughing, because I mean, it was a Wednesday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. The comedy club's not open at that time, and he's taking about, I think he was charging about €6 a pint. And people, you're on a European away day, you don't care. Do you know what I mean?
Like the
and the greatest thing about it, Sam, was actually me and Carl were on the door, ticking people as they come in from, you know, the email confirmations, and a lot of people coming in on their own, because they just had traveled to Amsterdam on their own, and they didn't, you know, they didn't know one, and they were leaving with other fans that they had met at the comedy show, which was that for me. I mean, selling out a show is amazing. And then we went into the square and we sung with fans, and the Fighting Cock boys were there as well. But it was just, it was something special that like they, people had come to the show on their own, and then they had found people through, you know, sitting on the table at the comedy club, and then they're like, come watch it with us, and they just found somebody to watch the game with.
Oh, I love it. That's what it's all about. I mean, that is to me always the magic of football in general. That, I mean, I've been to games on my own before, specifically away games when I've lived in other places. There is, second you get there, someone starts talking to you. You get that community going. So to have that going on at the show that you put on must have felt amazing.
Yeah, what? Just everything about that trip, I mean, all come down to the Fighting Cock again, because 2 days, I flew out to Amsterdam early because I had to do a BT Sport No Filter thing through the Fighting Cup. They approached me and said, like, come, you know, because you're a comedian, that can we do a bit with you about? And it was me and an Ajax fan sitting in a bar just talking, and it was, you know, the worst thing about it, Sam, we were talking. It was the we filmed the day before the Liverpool game. And we were talking about the potential of playing Barcelona in the final. And BT Sport had to... I texted the girl producing it as soon as Origi scored. And I said, you've got to cut that, right? Because I will get... If that goes out, I'm never going to live it down.
Did they cut it or did it go out?
They cut it, yeah.
Lucky. Because that is the thing, isn't it? If you get to a point where you're in a position of making some sort of commentary on football, no matter what it is, no matter how big or how small, if you get it wrong, they do not let it go.
Oh, no, yeah. It's brutal. I mean, and I think the whole world, the wives and their dog would have called Barcelona to go through that tie.
Yeah.
It was just the mere fact that they have a front line of Suarez and Lionel Messi, and Lionel Messi, the best player to ever grace the field. And you think, well, they're going to get one, right? And if they get one, it's game over. And it didn't. And I was so glad, because I'm not going to lie, I shit myself, yeah. Right? Because I thought, if that's going out on BT Sport, on their Facebook and their Twitter and live on BT Sport, some jumped up Spurs fans saying that, you know, looking forward to playing Barcelona in the final.
I think sometimes that Liverpool 4-0 game kind of can, again, with all respect, can overshadow what Tottenham did against Ajax. Both English teams, absolutely amazing to get to that final. Amazing semi, best semi-finals in Champions League history, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was. It really was. I think it was the craziest 48 hours of football I've ever seen. But and I don't know if it overshadows it, because, you know, okay, I'm a bit biased, but I would say that the Tottenham comeback, being away from home, being having 45 minutes to do it, is the greater comeback. But, you know, yeah. Don't want to start.
But you would say that, wouldn't you? No, but yeah, to be fair, it was also a dying second goal as well. I do remember watching that game and thinking, I don't feel like it's over just yet.
Where I'm such a regular in Amsterdam at the Comedy Club, I probably go there about four times a year. I have a lady friend that I visit sometimes when I'm in town for a drink, and, you know, sometimes stay at hers because my hotel is out of the way. You know how it is. I left at half time. I went to the KFC because me and Carl and the Fighting Cock Boys couldn't get tickets. I mean, tickets were gold dust. Mm. And we watched it in this pub that was just taken over by Spurs.
Nice.
And I left at half time, worse for wear. So I went and got a Zinger burger, and I text my female friend, and I said, what are you doing? I'm gonna come over. And she said, I'm working late tonight. And I went, I'll go back and watch the second half.
Well, I mean, good choice. Good choice. You know,
I sometimes think they're in a parallel universe or dimension or whatever. There's me just getting my end away and then going, I'll just check the full-time score, and then just, you know, just crying because I'd missed it, you know?
Yeah, well, that's
probably
the thing. I mean,
probably shouting.
I mean, David, I don't know who this lady friend of yours is, but would she be worth, worth missing a 90, you know, a 94th or whatever it was minute goal, it winner?
No, it was a 96th minute.
I don't think any woman is. I mean, I mean that with all respect. I mean, I'm a married man, but I do remember purposefully kind of planning our wedding on, I think, an international break weekend, knowing that I wouldn't be missing anything.
Oh, that's, yeah. It's, my friend was getting married before he actually got postponed through Corona, but we were waiting for the TV fixtures to be announced so we would know if we'd bloody missed it. Tottenham Everton. But we're all tired. We're like, please, can it get moved to the Sunday, please? Because we're going to have to miss it. Tottenham Everton.
Somewhere there's an amazing documentary. I think it's on YouTube. You hear about all these documentaries at the moment, the Man City documentary, Sunderland Until I Die. But in my top, it's got to be in my top five football documentaries of all time. It's a little show about weddings that the BBC must have put on about 20 years ago. And it's one episode is just about a Newcastle fan who's getting married on the day of the FA Cup final from 99 against Man United.
Right.
And it is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. He's literally, while the bride's walking down the aisle, he's got this like radio plugged in one of his ears.
Yeah.
And you can see him going, go on, go on. Like, she's literally walking up the aisle to this like beautiful music. And he's just going, go on, go on, go on, no, no. It's, honestly, if you can find it, and I say that to everyone.
I'm going to watch that.
It's one of the funniest things.
We get a lot of questions on the Fighting Cock of like, oh, lads, like, you know, especially when we were really good, like 3-4 years ago, and we was kind of going for titles and stuff. But we would get a lot of questions of like, oh, it's my wedding, but, you know, it's a vital game or whatever. What should we do? And you're asking a bunch of fucking Tottenham mad lads. I mean, I don't think once we've ever sided with just get married, mate, you know? Just. David Fleetley through my army. Yeah, we're on shot.
we'll start then with your lifelong love affair with Tottenham.
It's my family's club, so I wasn't really given much choice. So my dad's Irish, my dad's a United fan, but right. I've always more sided with my mum and my mum's side of the family, and her brother's got a Tottenham hat, and I was never given a choice really, and I mean I was born in 91, so growing up supporting Tottenham in the the late 90s, early 2000s, when I would have really got into it was fucking tough, man. So, I mean, I remember my uncle taking me to the 4-3 Man City game where we were 3-0 up. Joey Barton had been sent off.
Yeah.
2003, around there. And Joey Barton had been sent off, 3-0 up at half-time, and we lost 4-3. And I remember walking out of the Park Lane with my uncle, looking up at him, and I was about 11 years old, and I said, "Why do you make me support this shit?"
And what was his answer to that? How do you
answer? About 11. Yeah, about 11. I was allowed to swear at football. That was the deal. I was allowed to. Don't tell your mum, but once we go through them gates, you're going to hear things. And I was allowed to say the odd shit, maybe. And I can't remember exactly his reaction, but I think I remember he rolled up his program and stuck it under his arm and probably just shrugged and probably thought, yeah, why am I making you support this shit? Obviously, growing up in the late 90s, early 2000s, it was tough. I mean, Ginola, I don't really remember Ginola too much. I think it was just before I really kind of understood football and how good he was. Mm. So I think it was Berbatov was the first player I saw and thought, wow, this guy's on a different planet. And I think Berbatov really helped me fall in love with football, I think. Just because of how it can be played so gracefully.
Yeah, I mean, I always liked Berbatov, and I liked how you don't get too many of this these days. He's very kind of like almost sociopathic looking footballers who just kind of get the job done. Do you know what I mean? They're the likes of, like, a bit like Scholes. You know, what does Scholes enjoy in life? Because it's not football, but he's very good at it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just this almost psychotic look on their face of, I'm out here, I'm getting the job done.
Yeah.
I'm not going to enjoy it. I'm just going to get shit done.
Do you remember Tottenham left-back Benoit Raciocato?
Yes.
Would openly admit that he hated football. There was interviews of his teammates, and they would be talking about, I don't know, the Champions League final or whatever, a big game that was on the night before, and but I don't like football. Like, this is the best paid job I can get. And it's a job to me, but I don't like football.
I didn't know about it. He was that not into it. Again, he's one of these people who didn't look like he enjoyed his game, but...
Yeah.
I'm happy. I'm now away to get me shoot measured.
Yeah, what I'm going to do is as well throughout this podcast is I'll give you some emergency facts about Tottenham that you may or may not know. And I'm going to hit you with one now because you brought him up. David Ginola, my mum's second favourite footballer of all time. My mum had a very big thing for David Ginola. That's not
a lot
fact.
Of women did, didn't they?
No, they did. They did. That's not the fact. Don't worry. No, did you know he caused quite a lot of controversy because he was voted both the Football Writers Association Player of the Year and the Footballers Players Association of the Year. So, yeah, the player of the year from both camps in the 98-99 season, so the treble-winning season for Man United. And there was a lot of uproar that a Man United player didn't win it that season. It was David Ginola picked up both awards.
I knew that he won one of them. I think it was the player's player.
That's it,
But I didn't know that he won the PFA or whatever. But I didn't know he won both. No, but I do know because it's one of the rare things in the 90s that Tottenham fans could say, oh, well, we... we had a player, and
Well, I think didn't you win the League Cup that season?
1999.
Yeah, against Leicester, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had 10 men, or did they have 10? Oh, again, who scored? Who scored that goal? No, Nielsen.
Nielsen, yeah.
In the last minute of normal time, I believe, in stoppage time, maybe. I was 8 years old, so 7 years old. So it's kind of one of those things that was not really, but it was great. It was great. It was the manager was Graham.
George Graham, sorry.
George Graham, yeah. and they would never sing his name over Spurs. They would say the man in the coats, Blue and White Army or something.
Oh, did they? I didn't know that. Well, they'd never sing his name.
He won him a cup, essentially. But, was it the man in the overcoats, Blue and White Army or something like that. And there'll be Spurs fans listening to this, and they'll know more than me, but because they're old as fuck.
Well, I remember a vivid memory of that final. I remember watching it, and there's the best kind of scuffle between Robbie Savage and I think it might be Justin Edinburgh.
I have more knowledge on the 91 Cup final where I wasn't even born than I do of this 99 Cup final.
I mean, it is a very random one. I mean, not many people kind of... Oh, who was it? But anyway, if you can find it, it's just this fantastic bit where they have a bit of a scuffle and it ends on them both kind of slapping each other. It's a proper kind of a Pat versus Peggy in EastEnders kind of... It's a full-on, like, bitch slap each. It's one of the funniest things. I think that's what ended up in a red card. I think it might have been Savage who got a red card. I might be completely wrong. As I said, it's quite an obscure reference, this one. I mean, you got into a Champions League final last year, and here we are talking about the League Cup final from 99, but that's how we roll on this podcast.
Edinburgh trying to get away from Savage. Oh, and there were arms raised there. Savage sees yellow, and Edinburgh sees the red.
See, I always think of the 91 Cup final because Terry Venables... It was a very young, we played a very young, good Nottingham Forest team. And actually, Terry Venables actually said, they don't like it up them, they're young, just get in their face, get over. And there's this famous bit where Justin Edinburgh and somebody else are teaming up on Roy Keane, and a young Roy Keane calling him some very questionable things.
Well, that 91...
I know that part.
That 91 Cup final breaks my heart a bit because of Gascoigne.
Yeah.
So sad. Because you just feel like...
on drugs or something. Everybody I know that was at that cup final, they said that they were watching, because he was our prize player, that you kind of watch him warm up, right? And you can see, especially, I never saw Gazza play, but especially with a player like Gazza, I think it all comes down to what kind of mood he's in. If he's up for it, then the opposition don't have much of a chance against him. But if he's going in half-hearted, he's not up for it. So my friend said, and I've heard this from a few people, they watched Gazza in the warm-up, and they all thought, what the fuck's he on? Like, he's on something. and lo and behold, the game kicked off, and he decided to go and, he should have been sent off, really.
Yeah.
If he hadn't broken his leg so bad, and it wasn't the early 90s, he would have been sent off, 100%.
No way now. I mean, it's a bit like how in World Cup 90, they showed that again yesterday because the BBC are running kind of these World Cup rewinds, and they showed the 1990 semi-final against Germany. And I remember at the time, that tackle, considering it was 1990, they said it was very unjust that he got a yellow card and so on. But actually, you look at it now in modern football terms, you think, that's a yellow.
Late, wasn't it?
But I mean, I just felt for him because he always wanted to lift a cup at Wembley. I think that's just what he lived for. And the fact that he was so close to it, and then he didn't get to do it. And I think it's all those little opportunities he missed out on that resulted in him kind of losing his way a bit, really. But I mean,
what was this? I've now gone back to what was the Ginola fact?
That was just it, that he won the two awards. Yeah, of course. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'll hit you with another one there. Another emergency fact here. Tottenham's the only team to have won the FA Cup while still playing their trade outside of the Football League. Spurs also became the first team to...
1901.
Oh, yeah, he's got it. Straight in. Yeah. Straight in, 1901. And I'm going to hit you with some fact that you might not know at some point. You were talking a bit about, the Champions League run last year, obviously. Would you say that's probably been your highlight of being a Spurs fan in your lifetime?
Yeah, yes, I would. It's magical. And I think a lot of people that don't really understand football will say, oh, but, they won nothing, essentially, so they've got nothing to show for it. But you can still celebrate such a run and the memories and the jubilation it made you feel. And just that whole run, if you look at it, from we were really bad in the group stage, we got off to a really bad start, we should have been out about three or four times in the groups. I remember going to Wembley, actually, we played PSV. We were 1-0 down within the first couple of minutes. And Harry Kane scored two in the last five. One of them was a really, really deflected. It was at the back post and he went to header it back across the keeper and it's hit their defender's bloody arse or something and gone in the near post. Mm. A really lucky, scrappy goal to win the game. And that gets us vital points that keeps us just alive. But then we have to go to the Nou Camp and get we have to match Inter Milan's results. And, you know, luckily Barcelona had already qualified, but I mean, they had still, they were playing Ousmane Dembele and, you know, they're not crap, just because it's not Lionel Messi, they're not shit players, you know? And we go 1-0 down to Ousmane Dembele in the first, because then Pochettino decides, oh yeah, I'll play a weakened squad as well. And he plays people like Carl Walker-Peters at the Nou Camp. Sometimes, I mean, I love Pochettino to bits, but sometimes he made some weird decisions. And we're 1-0 down, and then we hear that that it's 1-1 at PSV, and Inter Milan is 1-1, and then Lucas equalised, a great bit of play by Harry Kane, ball in, Lucas equalised, but then we're holding on and we're just waiting for that full time. And I remember where I was watching that game. So the Fighting Cock do something called the socials, where we hire a bar and about 200 listeners can come down and watch it. So it's a real kind of, you're not a mixed pub with different teams. It's just Tottenham, 200 Tottenham watching it on a big projector screen. It's nice. Amazing atmosphere, right?
Yeah,
but of course, our game finished first. So we knew we weren't through yet because so then you know how they shift the camera to the other game?
Yeah.
So we're watching Inter Milan, and Inter Milan have gone through on goal and one of the best tackles I've ever seen, Sam. I'll send you it on Facebook, like from this PSV player to deny a goal. And then Icardi puts one over. I think it's a header. It was like the most intense, horrible. I've got chills just thinking about it right now because it was horrible to watch. but they hold out. PSV hold out. They get the draw. Tottenham are through into the Champions League knockout stages.
Yeah.
And then we get Dortmund. And Dortmund are a high-flying team. Jadon Sancho is really making a name for himself, not just in the Bundesliga, but on the world stage now, you know? And we destroy him. We destroy him. They come to Wembley, and we... aging Jan Vertonghen has Sancho in his pocket and scores a screamer.
Mm.
And which was great. That was probably the only fixture of that whole Champions League run that we thought, oh yeah, we got this in the bag, because it's 3-0 by the first leg, and then obviously we get Man City, and it's our first game back at the new stadium.
Yeah,
in the Champions League, and we win. It was a tense game. I was there. It was tight. The Son nicks us a goal about 20 minutes ago. We take a 1-0 lead back to the Etihad, and everyone knows what happens there. Like it was, again, we had a social for it, so I think we were at capacity, about 250 people, and I had a friend that came over from Australia. We were standing in central London, and it was a lovely weather, and we went on a park. Basically, we walked along the Thames, and every pub we saw, we stopped for a pint. Right, go back to the hotel, change, and we go to the social. We're already half cut, and then just the most manic of 90 minutes, Sterling scores in 5 minutes in. You think, Tottenham, keep it tight. Sterling scores. Fuck. Then Son goes down the other end and scores. And then Son scores again about 2 minutes later. It was I think that might have been more crazy than the Ajax semi, just for the sheer emotion, because it just... And then obviously that Aguero offside, you know... Fucking hell, man. I don't know if this is what you wanted me to relive.
No, this is exactly it. No, go for it, mate.
And so at the social is a big long bar. It's under like a railway. So it's an arch shaped bar, and right at the end is a big screen. And then just to the right of the screen is where me and the Fighting Cock Boys usually stand. And that Sterling goal, you could just feel the heartbreak. 250, 300 people. It was awful. Yeah. And there was one girl. I don't know who she was. Just obviously a listener, a Tottenham fan. She was screaming, "It's offside, it's offside." And I remember hearing her, but just I turned away from the screen. I just, I mean, it's Tottenham. It's typical Tottenham, you know. Just that close to a Champions League semi-final, and then they checked it, and it was fucking about half a yard offside. It's not even that much, and it's fucking Christian Eriksen, because he could have just held the ball or just punted it as far as possible. He tried to play a little pass inside. Why? Lucky man.
Oh, I remember watching that one as well. I never forget Poch falling to his knees. Like, you know, all the emotion came out at full time. But I love how he just remembered to unclip his Rolex before he fell. If you watch him, he sort of unclips the Rolex and goes, "Well, I'm in tears." You know, he did that beautiful speech afterwards. And again, I think it was that match or the next one. But I just remember him taking that Rolex off. Oh, that's it. Yeah, it was the next one. Sorry. Yeah.
I think everybody in that stadium was just shocked. I remember climbing up on top. They had this big, massive barrel thing that was like there for decoration. It was like an old whiskey barrel, but it was huge. And I climbed on it, and I remember getting on there and thinking, "Oh fuck, this isn't very stable. And I don't know if I can get down." And then all the Tottenham fans thought I was just like doing it to celebrate, and they started going, "You know," at me, and I was just thinking, "I can't get down. I'm really scared." And then we go to the semi, and obviously, I mean, that is we lose 1-0 at home, and we've got it all to do. And I mean, so we had the show in the day, and then me and Carl went out and got some lunch. We met Flav, Kayvon, and some friends from the Fighting Cock and stuff. And we found this bar, and it was just. I remember that Ziyech goal going in, and thinking, oh, "That's it, and it's done. It's so done." And even the first Lucas Moura goal, I didn't celebrate. And I remember my friend Kayvon said, "Come on, believe." And then the second one, I celebrated a bit, but I just thought, "No, just." And then I don't know if you remember, but Vertonghen hit the bar about the 86th minute. Mm. And as a football fan, you know, you get that chance. You get in any big game that's end to end, you'll get one chance. You'll get one big chance, and you have to take it. And that was it, I thought, because it hits the bar, it comes back to Vertonghen, and he strikes it, and then it gets cleared off the line. And you think that's it. Like, and the mentalist thing, Sam, is Ajax. There was 5 minutes added on. Ajax had a goal kick at 94:20.
Mm.
Like, they had a goal kick. And then 30 seconds later, the ball was in the net.
The goal, in my memory, I mean, God knows how it must have felt to actually be a Spurs fan. I mean, I'm always the way that, look, I'm never going to be able to enjoy Champions League football as a Reading fan. But I always back the English teams. And just that goal, I swear, is the slowest goal I've ever seen in my life. Like the
it
way
just trickled, didn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
I remember Flav being... He had his hands in the air, you know, like in a Y shape, just froze.
Yeah.
And I broke down in tears. I was on my knees in tears in this bar. And it felt like the bar, it just, reality had gone in slow motion. I don't even know where Carl Donnelly was at this stage. I remember my friend came on picking me up because I was on the floor, and he was like, "Get off the fucking floor of the bar. It's filthy down there." Just... I don't know. We all spilled onto the street and just you're hugging people you'd never met. And just, it's almost an anticlimax thinking about it because of how the final was. And I was at the final, and I'll never watch that back in my life. But it doesn't mean that I can't enjoy that moment.
I
think a lot of stupid Twitter football fans will make it sound like you can't enjoy that semi-final moment because you did fuck all in the final, you know? But that's not what football is, essentially. It's not all about...
No, it's not. I mean, I think you nailed it there when you said some football fans and some not, you know, and you can tie them in, really, with non-football fans don't understand it. I mean, to me, what you're describing is it's the whole experience of it. I mean, these are sort of social things you're putting together with, you know, with the Fighting Cock. That sound amazing. Do you know what I mean? If there was an opportunity to do that with my club, I'd be there every week. You know, the whole atmosphere of it, being with other fans, that is what it's all about. I think it's a big reason why we'll always remember World Cup 2018 massively. It's one of those World Cups where everyone just happened to be out. you know, screens were going up in town centres, screens were going up in cities.
And that's a feel good feeling, right? Podcast. Remember that Colombia penalty shootout?
Yeah.
Do you remember how that made you feel when everybody in the pub or whatever you felt, right?
Yeah.
I remember how that made me feel. Times that by 50. And that's how the Ajax goal, that Lucas Moura goal made
you can't
feel.
You can't even sell that as an illegal high.
No, honestly, like, and I mean, we was in Amsterdam. I think there's a lot of people on stuff already. And I just imagine, I don't know how their mind didn't explode at that stage.
As I ask everyone who comes on the podcast, what do you say has been the lowest or maybe most embarrassing time of being a Tottenham fan?
2015-16 season when Tottenham lost the league. Tottenham lost the league. I mean, I'm saying that Tottenham were never first that whole season when they were going against Leicester. So I don't know why I've even said that, to be honest. But when Tottenham were fighting for the league, and it looked like we might have a chance. Everyone thought, right? I mean, Tottenham were the second best team that season, without a doubt. And everybody thought that the Leicester thing wouldn't last, you know?
Yeah.
Even going into the last few months of the season, you think they're going to fall away. They've got a thin squad. They're going to fall away. Tottenham ended the season at Newcastle, the last game of the season. And me and my friend Gary booked trains from London, hotels, and tickets in the Newcastle end because we couldn't get them in the Tottenham end. And we thought, well, if we're lifting the title, I want to be there. I don't care where I'm sitting. I want to be there to see Tottenham lift the title. Of course, by the time the game had come round, the title had gone, Battle of the Bridge and whatever. But me and Gary were like, well, we've paid for the trains, we've paid for the hotel, paid for the match ticket. Might as well just go up. Do you know what I mean? Have a piss up in Newcastle. Why not? And so we go up there, we sit in the Newcastle end. And we know that we need at least a draw for this above Arsenal for the first time in like 20 years or whatever. And we get battered 5-1.
Mm.
And I remember, I mean, growing up, I grew up in East London. My friends at Tottenham, West Ham and Arsenal were very kind of evenly split. And my two best friends in the world are Arsenal fans. But we couldn't even get a draw to finish above Arsenal. I mean, the title was gone. We just finished above your arch rivals, for fuck's sake, but walking out of St James's Park and my phone is belling up Arsenal fans. That might have been my lowest point, yeah.
Really, that Ben? So, because you must have spent the majority of that season thinking we're probably going to nick it near the end.
Of course, you do start to think that because I'm not going to lie, Sam, again, biased, but you look at us and Leicester, we were playing amazing football. They wasn't, you know? They were playing. Yeah. They had Hoof and Morgan at the back. Brutal. I'm not listening. One in the fucking league, but we had maybe the best ever Harry Kane. I think injuries might have kind of interrupted him becoming a better player than he was that season. Dele Alli scored almost 20 goals. You know, Heung-min Son. We had a great Moussa Dembele, Vertonghen and Alderweireld at their prime. You know, Danny Rose, Kyle Walker. What a team. You know.
Yeah.
And you just think, we're going to nick it. I remember we went to Stoke and it would have put us a couple of points behind Leicester at that stage because of the match day fixture. It was a Monday night fixture. And would have put us a couple of points just behind. And we just blew Stoke out the window. I mean, Stoke, a team that Tottenham never really blew out the window because we'd always succumbed to their kind of thuggishness. But I think I remember Kane just bending one in about 5 minutes in, just right, bending it for outside of the box into the far corner off the post, and you think, fucking hell, we're going to do this, you know? I don't know.
I'll tell you what, David, normally at this point of the podcast, I ask, what do you want to see from your team for the remainder of the season? What do you want to see from them next season? But it's a difficult thing to ask at the moment. So instead, I want to ask, how do you think it's going to feel to walk into New White Hart Lane, the first game when football was back properly? How's that? How do you think that's going to feel?
I think it would just be a sense of relief, really. Sense of relief until they kick off and realise how shit they are again. But I mean, just a relief. I mean, you know what I was thinking is, I mean, there's no denying that Tottenham need investment. I had a squad that needed to be turned over 2 or 3 years ago and had that two transfer windows where they didn't buy anything.
Yeah.
And you think, well, the last window, Lo Celso looked a very handy little player. You've got that Bergwijn from the Dutch league who looks, again, got the physical attributes to be a good Premier League player. And you think, that's a couple of positive signings, right? But we need maybe 2 or 3 more windows. And I just think going back now, after this, the world is going to go into a real financial crisis of kind of because of what's happening. And I just don't know if buying, spending millions and millions and millions is going to be acceptable on footballers, you know?
Were you excited with the appointment of Mourinho? Do you think he's the right man for the job?
So when the rumours were about Pochettino being sacked or leaving the club and stuff like that, Flav did a thing where he called all the fighting cock lot and we all just gave a 5-minute kind of reason of, well, we poch in or poch out. And I said, I was very on the fence, but I said, I do not want Mourinho. And then about 3 days later, Mourinho was appointed. And it's tough, right? Because you look at his track record and what he's won, and there's no doubt that he was a very, very talented football manager. And when his footballing manager career is over, when he decides to pack it up, he will go down as a Hall of Famer, kind of, you know?
Yeah.
But the way he was at United, quite worrying, the way that he threw players under the bus and stuff like that. Mm. He's already started that at Spurs with Tanguy and Ndombele, who looks like he's got the attributes to be a very good footballer. Out of shape, not really motivated. You can tell that. He's one of these players that I would probably do really well under Harry Redknapp, you know?
Right.
But the last game that I went to was Tottenham Burnley. It was a 1-1 draw. It was a shit game. And he pulls off Ndombele at half-time and then he's after the match presser says how he's not good enough or he's not performing enough and stuff like that. And for me, it just felt like, you're not long in this club, Jose. Just why don't you just try and beat Nottingham Forest? I don't know if that's how you're going to get the best out of your players. And I'm scared that you look at someone like Nagelsmann, the RZ Leipzig manager, and he's progressive. They play in triangles, they press high, they keep the ball well, you know, and I don't know if football has progressed past what Mourinho did 15 years ago.
Right.
You know? I'm not saying it has because, you know, this man is a footballer and he knows more about football than he's forgotten more about football than I know, you know?
Mm.
So who am I really to judge? But it's always going to be a worry when you see his recent track record hasn't been great, but we'll see.
Is the ghost of Poch going to be there for a long time? And what on earth happened? Like, how do you go from, like you said, in 2016, nearly winning the Premier League, top-end European finishes after that, and then a Champions League final? How did this campaign go so wrong?
It all comes down to lack of investment, really. And there's one game that always stands out about 2017-18 season. We play Liverpool at Wembley, and we blow them out of the water, beating 4-1. We are so much better than them in every aspect of the pitch. Liverpool go on and buy one of the best goalkeepers in the world, one of the best centre-halves in the world, right? And add a few more players, and they got the left back. And you know, but they made 2 key signings because it was quite obvious that they needed a solid back line, you know? Mm. And Tottenham went on and didn't buy anybody for 2 years, right? Tottenham went on and had the same squad and essentially have still got the same squad now as they had in 2016, you know? And those players have either declined or have stagnated, you know? And or stuff like Dembele's left. And Dembele was such a good player, like so underrated. And you just don't replace them overnight. And we haven't invested. And now look at us. We've fallen out of the top 4, we're probably not even the top 6 side at the moment. And it just, if you look at us and Liverpool, where, you know, 3-4 years ago we were actually a better team, but they invested and we didn't, and that's what it comes down to. I think when you're at the top, you have to keep churning over the players, keep the investment going in. And I'm not saying that you go out and you buy, you spend 200 every window. That's not what I'm saying. But you can't just have the same squad and expect to get the same results.
No, I see what you mean. It's been a difficult season for you guys, but if it is null and void, you can pretend it never happened.
I think that would be the best thing, because we'd be in the Champions League.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think not winning the final in the Champions League pay a toll in the squad of Mauricio Pochettino?
I don't know, because I never lost a Champions League final.
How are you guys finding the new ground, do you think, the new stadium? Have you been there much?
Yeah, I've been there quite a few times. Not as many as I'd like. I'm actually living in North Norfolk at the moment. So.
Right.
But it's weird, because it used to, you have a 62,000 seat stadium. It's going to be a tourist trap.
Yeah.
It's going to be. I mean, I don't care what club you are. You look at Old Trafford, and it seems very touristy as well. And I mean, we have a very, very talented South Korean, which means a lot of South Koreans come to England to see Sun play. And that's great, because it fills out our stadium, but it does affect atmosphere, because tourists don't really get the vibe, and you know, they don't really sing. And it can be, the atmosphere can be very, very bad, but then can be very good. But White Hart Lane was like that, and I think every stadium's like that. People get going when the team gets going, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've not been there myself. I was really hoping to this season.
It is like as a piece of architecture and pure footballing brilliance. And you can tell that the architect team and Daniel Levy, whoever helped design the stadium, has done it with football in mind, and that's a great thing. Not just an Emirates or whatever, where it's just this kind of your IKEA kind of stadium, you know.
Oh, of course. I mean, I think it takes a while to settle into a new stadium. I mean, funnily enough, my friend who's a Tottenham fan, he's a season ticket holder, and he said that the best atmosphere that he's enjoyed at the new White Hart Lane was actually when they all watched the Champions League final on a screen. Yeah. So like, it was just one end full of really hardcore Tottenham fans. So that's the best atmosphere they've had there. But it is a while. I mean, like I said, I haven't been to this ground, but I have been to West Ham's new stadium.
And, oh, that's awful, isn't it?
Oh, it's such a shame, because I went along with my father-in-law. My father-in-law is kind of a man and boy West Ham fan. He grew up in, you know, the 70s, went to games in the 70s and the 80s at the Boleyn ground. And going with him, you can just see there's a bit of heartbreak in him. You know, we're up in the nosebleed section. You can't really stand up. You can't make too much noise. There's people around you on phones, on tablets. And it's a shame. And they've kind of got little areas, little pockets where it's full of fans stood up and singing.
I've been there as an away fan, obviously, to the new, and I've been to the bowling ground as an away fan. And both of them, I mean, the bowling ground, lovely, actual proper football stadium, you know, proper. And then I really, if I had anything positive to say about, on a pure footballing level, as a human compassion, I'm trying to be nice here about West Ham.
Yeah.
I feel sorry, because their owners definitely have sold their soul for a cheap, shitty stadium. Where that gap that they have at the bowling ground, the bowling ground, the London Stadium, where they basically put the scaffolding bloody seats in, and then you have a little bridge. It's awful. Just really, really bad.
Well, you've certainly proved yourself to be a Tottenham fan, David. I mean, you run one of the biggest podcasts going, but it doesn't matter about your credentials. You've got to face the ultimate Tottenham quiz. Today's is provided once again by the guys at Children's BBC. Again, it is a sudden death round. Sudden death. If you get one wrong, that's it. I believe our highest score is 6 out of 10. And, or was it 7 with Graham? Who knows? Anyway, well, I think I've got enough now to get a leaderboard going. So, question one. Tottenham Hotspur's league game against Manchester United on May the 14th, 2017, was their last game to be played at which stadium? Is it Wembley Stadium or White Hart Lane?
White Hart Lane.
Do I like that?
Correct. What is the name of the Tottenham Hotspur mascot? Is it Corkrell, Cheep, or Chirpy?
Chirpy.
Do I like that?
Right, already I've got a picture round. So okay. I'm going to send this over to you. What is the name of this player?
Stephen Bergwijn.
Do I like that?
Correct. What position did Tottenham Hotspur finish in the 2018-19 Premier League season?
18-19. Fourth.
Do I like that?
That is correct.
Oh my God, I was like panicking. I was like, Ashley.
Nah, you're all good. You're all good. Right, what question are we on? Question five. So already you've beaten, you're on level with Jacob Hawley, Arsenal, who I know you're going to want to beat. Which Spurs player made the most appearances in the 2018-2019 Premier League season? Is it Hugo Lloris, Christian Eriksen, or Toby Alderweireld?
Toby Alderweireld. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Don't fuck with me.
Steady, David, don't! Get round! No, don't!
I'm afraid it's all gone wrong there. it was Lloris, yeah. So 4 out of 10, you have finished on par with Jacob Hawley at Arsenal.
Do you know what? I thought it was Lloris, but it was a trick question because I know Lloris has had a few injuries, the last recent years.
Yeah. I always say that. I think a lot of people, they go wrong thinking it's a trick question, but you've got to remember that these websites are children's BBC.
Oh, yeah.
Not to make you feel any worse.
Yeah,
but
it.
Don't worry, mate. David, don't worry, because everybody takes part in the podcast and has an attempt at the Are You the Ultimate Fan quiz, comes away with a gift. First of all, we're in the middle of a hiatus at the moment of football, and I thought if this break of football was a Tottenham player, who would it be? And the first player that comes to my head of not playing football for a long time is Darren Anderton.
Yeah, that's true.
So therefore, you have got your very own Darren Anderton on his way to you in the post.
That's very nice. Thank you.
In his 97, I believe, kit there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, apologies if you already got this. I can replace it. But a lot of that quiz was about the 18-19 season. So I've got you the away Tottenham shirt from that season.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you.
Do you have that one already?
No, I don't. I don't have that one. No.
Well, I've got this one for you. It's Kane on the back for you as well.
Oh, lovely. Thank you.
You can't do that. So I'll get you
really nice.
That's all right. No problem at all. And I'll get your address, obviously, when we're not on recording a podcast, because I don't want you to get a load of hate mail from Arsenal fans. Before we go, I want to hit you with one last fact. I've quickly just had a crawl through, and I think I've got a fact that you might not have.
Okay.
Okay, so did you know that the very day in 1919, that Arsenal grabbed Tottenham's place in the first division, the club's pet parrot collapsed and died? The parrot had been a gift.
I did know that.
You did know that?
From the South America tour, and that's where the saying, sick as a parrot, comes from.
I thought I had one there, David. I thought I had one. Do you know what? I've been really smug on this podcast so far. I'm going, did you not know this fact about your own club? Well, I've got them all here. And today you've just, you've knocked them out of the park. That was going to be my final fact. That is where the phrase sick as a parrot comes
from. Yep.
And you've mugged me off on my own podcast. No, seriously, David, thank you so much for doing
this. That's been fun. I've really enjoyed it.
A huge thank you once again to David Alfie Ward. Ain't he a good laugh? He's a good lad. If you want to hear more from him, of course, the Fighting Cock podcast, you can stream that now. And you can find him on social media. Just search David Alfie Ward. He'll come up. He's on Twitter, for example, at David Alfie Ward. Now, this podcast was recorded during the lockdown. So therefore, the quality probably wasn't as good as it would be had we been in person. It was recorded over Zoom, through phones, etc. But that is the way of the world at the moment. And speaking of the way of the world, I wanted to share this extra bit that I recorded with David. He's doing something really nice during the lockdown. Now, hopefully you're listening to this in the far-off future, where all this lockdown coronavirus bollocks is a thing of the past. But what David was doing during the lockdown, which I think is really commendable, is he was offering chats to help people with their mental health, offering to meet them online for a coffee. Have a listen to this.
But I do a lot of stuff in like mental health and try and help people open up. So I do these coffee meets where I chat over Zoom if somebody wants a coffee over Zoom, and just make sure that they're okay.
Oh, brilliant.
It's just on my social media. If you fancy a coffee meet, just message me on something and we'll sort it out. FaceTime on Instagram, whatever. Just what it is I noticed that a lot of people from, like, when I listen to the radio, like talk shows and stuff, have said that they've really missed coffee shops. And I think, like, we've got pubs covered because we've all been boozing at home and, you know, there's so many virtual pub quizzes and stuff like that. But I feel like sometimes just meeting your friends for a coffee is a big part of our society, and it's a big part of helping us with our mental health. So I decided, if you feel lonely or you just want to chat, I'll make a coffee, and then, you know, we'll arrange a time and I'll call you, we'll drink the coffee and have a chat, and that's it.
Dave, that sounds like a fantastic thing to do, and it's a very important thing at the moment to look after your mental health and keep the conversation going. So all props to you for doing that, mate. It's a great cause. What a good bloke. As I said, find him on social media, find him on Twitter at David Alfie Ward. Send him some love. Speaking of love, you can always, I'd really appreciate you subscribing to our podcast, leaving us a review, or dropping us an email. Just contact comedianstalkingaboutfootball@gmail.com. Otherwise, I'll see you for the next episode, which is Lou Thitz talking about Manchester City. Until then, do take care of yourself, guys, and I'll speak to you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.